girl, I'm not a boy.
Good morning. This is Nick Ostrow, one of the foreign language program directors here at Dartmouth College. Today, I have with me Angina D., who we have invited for a gender and language workshop this afternoon entitled Please Don't Gender Me. This talk will identify challenges for gendered language instruction and outline those experiences of trans and non-binary students in language classrooms. She will discuss linguistic perspectives on grammatical and social gender and suggest practical strategies for gender awareness in the university classroom. This talk has been kindly sponsored by the Lesley Center for the Humanities. This morning, I would like to take the opportunity to talk to Angina about these issues. Angina, it's great to have you here with me today.
Thank you, Nick. I'm really happy to be here.
So, Angina, you're going to give a workshop and a talk later today, which is called Please Don't Gender Me, Inclusive Foreign Language Instructions in a Gender Diverse Campus Community. We have been hearing about gender in the media, and we have read many articles about that. So can I ask you, what's the issue with gender today? Why do we have to talk about it? And what different gender identities do we encounter these days? Could you unpack this for us?
Sure, Nick. So it's certainly not an easy answer, and I won't be able to give you a complete answer to your question. It's a much complex topic. But the importance is that we must not abide to the gender binary that is culturally constructed, which we consider as male, female, man, woman, and we need to understand and respect that gender is not binary and that there is much more in between that binary that we need to address.
And if we talk about gender as binary, I understand this to be related to the concepts of gender on the one hand and biological sex on the other. Could we briefly talk about how these two concepts differ from one another?
Yes, of course. So there's actually three concepts, or four if we want to include sexual orientation. So the first one is sex, which is generally assigned at birth, and it is determined by anatomy. So determined by your hormones, by your sexual characteristics that you show at birth. That's how you get assigned your sex. The second one is gender identity, which is more a personal identification. So that is whether you personally identify as a woman or as a man. The third one is gender expression, which is how you express your gender on the outside. So that could be clothing, makeup, anything that we culturally or socially associate with a certain expression of a certain gender identity.
I see. And we have heard from the gender theorist, very well-known gender theorist Judith Butler, that all gender is performed. She said all gender is performed. So how do I take the meaning of that? Is this what you just told us? A performance of gender could be putting makeup on, could be putting certain clothing on. Do you have other examples of how gender can be performed?
Yes, absolutely. So it's on the one hand, you're right, it's the gender expression that I just talked about, but it goes way beyond that. It's also, and Butler calls this acts. What kind of acts do we perform? And that can be, how do we sit? How do we walk? How do we cross our legs? So all these things that culturally and socially are associated with gender that we repeat over and over again over time. And that's what Butler calls a performance of gender.
And would it then be fair to say that we learn these patterns from role models that we have been surrounded by?
Absolutely. Yes. First of all, these concepts are socially constructed to be associated with a particular gender. So crossing your legs is associated with the feminine gender, while sitting widespread is more masculine, for example. And these are all not only socially constructed, but also socially and culturally taught from when we are small.
So it seems to me that problems might arise if the biological sex and what is expected of that sex by society does not match gender identity. Could you unpack this issue for us?
When the sex and the gender identity does not match
in the eyes of what a culture, a society by which a person is surrounded expects, right?
Right. So you may be born male. You were assigned male at birth. However, your identity may range from anywhere from you may identify with male. That's what we consider being cisgender. So your assigned sex and your gender identity match. But you may identify as non-binary or even identify as a woman. So the identification within yourself does not match your sex. Now the issue becomes, how do people on the outside approach you based on that? Many times the issue is that if your gender expression is one way or another, that assumptions will be made about your gender identity based on your gender expression. And that's how people are going to approach you. And that's what people are going to expect from you, which may be an issue for you, especially when we talk about pronouns. What do people refer to you as? And it may be a violation against your identity and not validating your identity. That's the biggest issue, I think.
And we have been talking about a couple of minutes ago about gender being performed. You could say that gender is being expressed by outward signs that then can be decoded by those around you. Mm-hmm. Now, in a way, we could say, if we switch our focus on languages and gender-related items in languages, that languages, of course, are also performed.
Absolutely, yes. Language and the performance in the language classroom is many times an act that we put on. What we can't forget is that there is a really close relationship between language and identity, and that the use of language has been shown to be tied to things like depression, anxiety, and all of those things. So yes, while language in the classroom is definitely a performance, it doesn't change the fact that it affects our being.
So you're saying that if there can be a certain anxiety in language class, which is, in language theory, we call it the affective filter, right? The more anxiety you have on different levels, the more obstacles are being put in your way to learn the language effectively. And you say that this is not only based on class and on ethnicity, but that gender
Absolutely.
Also plays a very important role.
Absolutely, yes. So if you're not given the opportunity to identify with yourself, to have an identification with the gender that you feel or that you identify with, if the language does not give you that option, that's an anxiety level that is, like you said, an obstacle in your way and could potentially, or I strongly believe, that it inhibits language acquisition.
Do I lie the evidence? You say it was an accident, but my pronouns do belong till they tell me.
So I'm wondering then, if gender identities, and I understand them to be a very sensitive issue, if gender identity is a very sensitive issue, what strategies do I have as a language instructor to inquire about the identification with a certain gender with students that come into my classroom that I don't know well, they don't know me well? I mean, how far should I go to gather information? How best to do it?
Yeah, so these are issues that many feel, and this doesn't have anything to do with the classroom, but many generally feel uncomfortable with, right? The question, how do I know? How do I find out? Have a conversation. have a conversation with your students, the person in front of you, and we need to step away from this idea of being intrusive when we ask someone about their gender. And you may, maybe it helps if you think about gender more like, or gender or pronoun use more like names, right? So you don't need to ask about a person's gender or body parts to ask about their name. You can't tell someone's name just by looking at them. You have to ask, and which is totally a totally acceptable thing to do. We meet people every day. We ask them about their names, and it's totally acceptable. People are experts on their names, and even if the name is unusual, difficult to pronounce, or we haven't heard the name before, we consider that person to be the expert. So if we think of gender identity and pronouns in the same way, that the person in front of you is the expert of their own identity and of their pronouns, then maybe it's easier for us to approach it and ask.
Since you mentioned pronouns, of course, pronouns are a very important grammatical structure in many languages, especially in Western European languages such as German, French, Italian. Words are assigned a gender, masculine, feminine, or neuter, which I think is called the grammatical gender.
Correct.
So, which is different, I gather, and you can unpack this for us, perhaps from the social gender and gender identities of the students in our classroom. So what are the differences then between the grammatical gender that language teachers teach and the social gender? Are they related? Are they at odds with one another at times? And if so, how do we negotiate the two with one another?
So, of course, grammatical gender and social gender are two separate entities. However, there is a very close tie and they influence each other, or grammatical gender influences social gender in ways. What's the difference? Well, grammatical gender are the structures of the language that determine linguistic structures or whatever it may be, depending on the language. Grammatical gender determines the structure. Social gender is what is socially constructed in our society and what we consider, especially in that binary of male-female. Now, how do they come together? There's been several studies done in linguistics that show how much grammatical gender influences social gender or has an impact on social gender. And just to give you a couple of short examples, a study in a Russian class where students were asked to act like Monday or act like Wednesday showed that the students who were asked to act like Monday acted like what we would traditionally associate as a man, and students who acted like Wednesday were acting like a woman based on the grammatical gender of the terms Monday and Wednesday. Another example is for the study native German and Spanish speakers who were asked to describe words like bridge or key. Bridge in German is grammatically feminine and it's masculine in Spanish. So the speakers described the grammatically feminine gendered nouns as beautiful and slender and used adjectives that we would generally consider traditionally feminine. And the Spanish speakers describe the masculine word bridge as long, hard, useful, sturdy. So adjectives that we would stereotypically assign to masculine.
Which is interesting, because then we learn from this that grammatical gender in a way influences power relations or replicates power relations between what we think of as masculine traits and feminine traits. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yes, I would agree. Grammatical gender establishes certain power relationships based on the social constructions of gender we have in our society, I would say.
This is interesting. I want to go back to practical applications in the language classroom. While we might be able to shift socially constructed gender, as language teachers, we still have to deal with the linguistic material, right? And the grammatical genders in our languages have been established over many, many centuries. So as a teacher, how do I deal with teaching grammatical gender? I'm thinking in particular of pronouns. How do I teach pronouns? And I'm thinking about a very, very particular example of asking students to talk about other students in class, mm-hmm. and then having to assign, for the purpose of practicing grammatical structures, either a masculine or a feminine identity. Do you have any practical solutions for that dilemma that we face then?
Yes. So the first thing I would say is what I make sure to have that conversation with the students on day one of the class, so that I acknowledge that grammatical gender can potentially cause exclusionary environments in a classroom, and to let students know that I am aware of it, that there are limitations to solutions that I can offer, but that I am willing to find solutions that work for everyone. One, especially when it comes to pronouns, a strategy that I have employed is, first of all, I ask students to fill out a questionnaire on the first day of classes in which they tell me what pronouns they use, what names they use, and whether they feel that the grammatical structures of the language may be an issue for them, and if they want to talk about it.
And that's interesting. And do you share that information with the rest of the class? Do you ask permission first to do that? I figure that language teachers want the rest of the class to respect that gender and to use it for that person. You would have to share it with the class.
Absolutely. However, before you do that, you want to have a one-on-one meeting with the student. So I do have one-on-one meetings with anyone who may be identifying as non-binary or who may be identifying as a trans student, and we talk about possibilities. Now, the students may tell me, I want to use a masculine pronoun, I want to use a feminine pronoun, and or if someone says, look, I don't identify with one or the other, what do I do? So what I generally do with these students is we create a character together. And we write a biography of someone, we give this person a name, we give that person a pronoun, we write a biography about their family, their hobbies, and everything about all the topics that we will be discussing in the course. So that the student, when they're in the class, can take on that identity, and they don't have to feel that their own identity is being violated. Now, after I'm done with that, there are several questions that I do ask the student. One is, how do we want to proceed in class? Do you want to tell students? Do you want this to develop naturally? Do you want students to know? Do you want to announce it? Should I announce it? That's one thing. But then there are also other important questions like, would you like me to correct others if they misgender you? Would you like me to correct them in your presence? Would you like me to correct them in your absence? And then the last and probably most important question you want to ask someone who uses pronouns that may not match their gender expression or their sex is, are there situations in which you do not want me to use those pronouns? And you may get answers like, yes, parents' weekend, please do not use them. Graduation, please do not use them, right? So students may not have told family members about it. So you want to make sure, what are the restrictions? When do I not use them?
I can imagine that, this is great. I can imagine that some peers of transgendered students, for example, are apprehensive of using any form of pronouns because they do not want to make what they consider a mistake. Are there any, do you think it's a viable option for students to avoid using pronouns at all when they talk about another person and simply address them by name?
So that is something we do a lot, right? When we are uncertain about someone's gender identity or pronoun use, or when we don't feel comfortable with using a certain pronoun, we automatically switch to using that person's name. What I would say about your questions about students, I think we underestimate our students. I think our students are much more comfortable using any set of pronouns than we are. And they are exposed to it. They are exposed to it in the campus community. They hear it all the time, and they use it in English. So I think we are more the ones that are uncomfortable with it rather than our students.
So what's wrong with me? The world has seen someone that I don't see. Maybe the problems you're looking. Need to stop identifying people by their body.
That's very interesting. When I look at traditional language classes, and when I look at textbooks or online materials for languages online, what strikes me is that very often the masculine forms of nouns, of pronouns, dominate. In Germany, a while back, a lady by the name of Kramer tried to make her financial institution change their forms. What she asked them to do was to include gender-neutral languages that would be inclusive not only of male customers, but also address female customers by ending. Another example is the University of Leipzig. In Germany, a couple of years back, the university administration decided that they would, instead of addressing the staff and the faculty by the male form of their occupation, exclusively by the female form. And in both of these cases, there has been a significant backlash. Some people have said, why do we need to make these changes? Why do we have to address different genders in our forms? Everybody should know that we mean every person regardless of gender. In the case of the Leipzig University changes, critics have said, well, now you are discriminating as much against males as you have against females in the past. So I would really like to hear your take on these matters, and then again also we as language teachers could do in the classroom in order to be aware of the male forms dominating and perhaps rectify this if it needs rectification. What's your take on all of these issues?
I understand where the Kramer and also the University of Leipzig, where they came from and why they wanted these changes to be implemented. I have to say I don't agree with exclusively using one over the other. I think that's my entire point, that exclusions happen on all fronts, not just for gender non-binary students, but for female students, as you said, the domination of masculine forms. Several languages like Spanish and French, for example, whenever you have a group that includes females and males, and you refer to them, as long as there is one male person in the group, it could be 20 female and one male, you automatically use the male form to refer to that group. German is a little different. We should be using both forms, but you see it over and over again that the male form is used.
You see it in English too, don't you? So many people use the expression "you guys,"
absolutely,
even though you might address a group of males, females, transgender people.
Absolutely. And we see it in English also with professions. For example, if you mention the profession lawyer or dentist, people will automatically use he pronouns to talk about it. And if you use professions like nurse, people automatically use feminine pronouns to talk about a person whose sex or gender you don't even know, but based on the profession, you make those distinctions.
And I guess that comes down, again, if we compare English to a language like German, though, I think that goes back to the idea of grammatical gender versus social gender, right? It strikes me that English seems to be more gender neutral in terms of endings when it comes to occupations. German is much less so. So am I right if I think that German dominates the masculine forms in both ways, socially and grammatically, because people automatically might expect that a dentist is male and would use that pronoun, but it's also encoded, right? It's also reinforced by the ending.
Absolutely.
By the male or female ending, which might not be used.
Yep, absolutely. And that's where grammatical gender and social gender collapses, especially in German, right? We have the grammatical gender, which is the article that determines whether a noun is masculine or feminine. That's the grammatical gender. And then the ending of the noun, while of course that's also a grammatical structure to indicate masculine or feminine, it has a social connotation, and that's where the two collapse together. And you are absolutely right. I mean, materials, even textbook materials, dominate the masculine and also stereotypical associations. I mean, we see over and over again in textbooks that when we learn vocabulary for professions, it's always the man who's the doctor. It's always the woman who is the nurse, or it's always the man who is. We see that in our materials, especially older teaching materials, online materials. And then the other issue is many of these materials, even in giving directions, for example, use the masculine form, right? So the directions will say something like work with a partner, and then for the word partner, only the masculine form is used. So we're not being inclusive, or the materials are not being inclusive to include at least masculine and feminine forms. Now talk about gender neutral terms, that's a whole different story, but at least including both masculine and feminine is missing in many teaching materials.
Which comes back to Ms. Kramer and the response of her financial institution, where the financial institution claimed that they cannot include all genders in their language because it would be too cumbersome, too long, they didn't have enough space on the paper to do that. So in terms of practical strategies for the language classroom, what can instructors then do when they give directions to students working together as partners? Mm-hmm. Should we avoid assigning masculine or feminine or transgender to this kind of language whatsoever?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. So reason being, and I'm going to say, what does it matter to the institution, the bank institution of Ms. Kramer, whether she is male, female, transgender, non-binary, or whatever? What does that matter, right? So their argument of we don't have the space breaks down there. Just remove it altogether would be one option. But I see it the same way in the classroom. What does it matter whether two people who work together are male, female, non-binary, or any other identification? So let's use alternative methods, and there are many that you can use to avoid gendering. So instead of saying work with your partner, where you are forced to use masculine, feminine, or both forms, and then you're excluding non-binary students, use things like work with another person. Right? So person doesn't have a social gendered endings. Yes, it has grammatical gender, but not a social gendered endings. Use directions like work in pairs of two, work in groups of two, right? And you can, by doing that, you avoid gendering in any way.
So many assume you see.
You just talked about the very interesting concept of not of trying not to gender people in language instruction. Now, some language instructors might worry about the fact that while students in the U.S. American classroom setting should not be gendered or do not want to encounter being gendered, when these students then encounter the target culture of the language they're learning, they will, that's the criticism, they will eventually experience being gendered, also a lot of times unfairly and to their psychological detriment. So would you then say that it might be important to teach the students that they will be gendered and to learn about what these genders are and in what kind of situations this might come up in the and also to resist that. I mean, we do not gender them, then we take the opportunity from them to build up resistance to what they might experience when they go study abroad or live in country.
Right, so you are absolutely right. I'm not advocating to change the language. I am not advocating not to teach gendered pronouns or gendered forms of nouns. I do believe we need to teach the language in its normative forms, especially if we want to prepare students, like you said, to go abroad. However, what I am advocating for is including alternative forms. So I'm not talking about removing anything that's gendered, but I'm talking about including non-gendered options for students so that they are aware these exist. Yes, you are right. We need to have conversations with the students and, depending of the culture of the language, explain how what they may expect, especially our non-binary students, what they may expect if they go to the country of the language, how they may be approached. But if we start looking into the topic, we are going to quickly realize that norms are changing and many languages, German, Spanish, French, Chinese, I believe Arabic, and many more, do have gender-neutral pronouns available now. Yes, they are not officially included in the language yet, but they are available and they are being used. I can only speak of Germany, but my research has shown that they are being widely used in the trans community. So students will be able to encounter them in Germany as well.
Which might, if I get you right, which might make it necessary if these gender-neutral pronouns and forms are not included in the teaching materials that we have, and especially we have to look at the big publishers, and a lot of times the big publishers of textbooks are behind, right? Are behind the time. Do I get this right, that we should not shy away then from crafting our own tables where we include these gender-neutral pronouns and other forms?
Absolutely. I think that whether we actually teach them in the classroom or not is a different question because, as you say, they're not included in our textbooks. So we would have to create a big amount of our own materials for students to be able to use them and practice them in the classroom. Now, I do understand that it's not possible for every language instructor to do so. However, we should at least introduce them, maybe have handouts available that we can provide to students who are interested in knowing what these gender-neutral options are. And we should inform ourselves as language teachers, what are the current changes? What are the current movements in the culture of our language? So that we can inform our students about it. For example, in Germany in December of 2018, there was a law passed that now allows parents to indicate a third sex on the birth certificate. So parents are now given the option not to assign male or female, but rather indicate other as sex so that they can allow their child to make their own decisions and developments about their gender identity. So these are movements that are happening everywhere, and we need to look into that because if we do send our students to Germany, and especially if they're non-binary students, they are going to go into the trans community. They're going to find people from their community, and they stand there and be like, wait, why did Angina not teach me that these options exist?
And I guess you could say then, if parents in Germany are allowed to assign a third sex, then language teachers should also eventually give students the option, or give them all the possibilities that they're out there to identify with either sex, with none of these.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's not just pronouns, but also vocabulary. There are so many options how we can avoid using gendered vocab. You know, when I introduced the vocabulary for professions, for example, I introduced the male form, I introduced the female form. I point out, again, here's another example of how the grammatical structures of the language is binary, but here are some other options. So for example, instead of teacher, male form teacher, female form teacher, I introduced that, but then I also introduced the students to general forms over these specifics, which in German would then it would translate to as people who study. And those terms then do not include that socially connotated gender.
That's right. Yeah. Studying people, right. Or driving people.
Exactly.
Right? Which,
yes,
is a strange concept, which might sound like a strange concept to English speakers. But again, in English language, we do not have a separate female form for these types of education. That's right. And then you also talked about the issue of what assigning one gender over the other does to the identity of a person entering that culture. So I figure we have, as language instructors, we have so many opportunities to role play, and situational role plays are part and parcel of many language classes. So I'm wondering whether you could then also, right, engage in role plays that play with different scenarios. Do you think that this would be useful to make students aware of how situations can change, how power dynamics can change, depending on whether you address somebody as a male doctor, a female doctor, a boy, a girl?
Absolutely. I actually do that. I do role play activities in class where everyone will be assigned a character, and they get little cards, and the card will specifically tell them, your name is such and such, your profession is such and such, you use these pronouns. So, and then I have students get into these roles, and they have to respond to a certain pronoun being used with them. And not only does it help us practice pronoun use, especially if we want to include non-binary pronouns so that we can practice them among each other, but it helps students understand how non-binary students feel when they are being misgendered. I have conversations with my students about these topics, and they will often sit back and say, ooh, that felt really weird to have someone refer to me by the pronoun she. I didn't like it at all. And it helps create an understanding of how easily your identity is violated and disrespected by one simple pronoun.
And then I would like to ask one last question. Do you ask for student feedback at the end of the class of whether your strategies help the students in your class? Do you get formal feedback from them? And also, do you sometimes get personal feedback, which is outside, which happens outside of the classroom, outside the official process of evaluating? I mean, do you get those kind of responses from students?
Yes, Absolutely. I have been doing this inclusive approach in gender classrooms now. This is my third year. I've done several things. I've done small questionnaires at the end of the week, not every week, but here and there, where I've asked very open-ended questions and asked students to respond. And I've gotten a lot of comments on these, like, wow, it's so interesting to know that these options exist, or I'm glad that I may not use them personally, but I'm glad that they are, that I know what they are, so that if I meet someone who likes to use them, I am prepared. I have received multiple emails from specifically trans students who have, I mean, really been affected by my use of inclusive materials, and telling me that in other language classes, they have felt humiliated, and they've used the word humiliated, which for me is really strong, and that they were afraid of continuing language classes and that they're feeling completely changed. I've also seen many, many comments from students who are within the binary, who identify as woman or man, who use he or she pronouns, who have commented saying that while they identify within the binary, that they are very happy to have learned the forms, that they appreciate that the issue has been acknowledged in the classroom, and that I've gone beyond what the textbook or what the syllabus says. I've had a couple of students say, you know, she went beyond what the syllabus required her to teach to really prepare me to be able to survive and live in that language.
Which goes back to the concept that I think most of us as language teachers will agree to, that we should teach languages for real life. And
absolutely,
we shouldn't teach tables, grammatical tables, for grammatical tables' sake. So that is absolutely fascinating. That gives me a lot to think about. That is also, of course, a lot to take in, especially for a teacher who has not given much thought to these issues. So if we could end by you giving us one idea, and one idea only. If I'm a language teacher, would you give me one thing that I could do in my next class session in order to address the issue of gendering and not gendering students?
Absolutely. Include a syllabus statement. Include a syllabus statement that acknowledges that grammatical gender binaries exist in the language and that they may potentially cause exclusionary situations, and encourage students to come talk to you if they feel that this will be an issue to them. You will be surprised how just that simple syllabus statement and you acknowledging that the problem exists already goes really far. So if you start with that for the first semester, see how your students are going to approach you, and you'll see that students will start pointing things out in class because you've acknowledged it. They feel comfortable pointing things out. Then you go into the next semester and you add the next thing. And one thing to keep in mind is you will make mistakes. I make mistakes. I am so used to talking German within the binary that I make mistakes. You apologize, you move on, right? And you'll get those students, and maybe I'll end on this, you'll get students who even help you out with that. I've made a mistake one time in class where I said, work with a partner, and I only used the male form. And one of my students turned to me and said, so Dr. D, what do I do if there is no male partner left anymore? Who do I work with then? It made me aware, oops, I made a mistake. I apologized. I appreciated the student calling me out, but the student was only able to do that because I acknowledged that these issues will emerge in the classroom.
And I think that affirms, of course, that we sometimes learn best by mistakes. And
absolutely,
this is where learning can take place. Angina, it was really a pleasure to having you here today and to talk about these issues.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick.
And I look forward to your workshop this afternoon.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Scout, and this song is about being non-binary. I hope you like it.
Do I like the evidence? You say there's no offense. So many assume you see who is he and who is she. Just met and you think I'm someone else. Well, I'm trying to do me so I feel myself. Assumptions got me so annoyed. Ooh. I'm not a girl, I'm not a boy. Time trying to fit between the lines.